In traditional Chinese medicine, you don't separate body and mind. We work on them together. And no matter what imbalance you have in your body, you can have both physical and emotional manifestations of that.
Your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. This is the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we explore ways to build resilience, build confidence, and make our minds work in our favor. We draw from the fields of psychology and life design to help us intentionally create a rock-solid mindset upon which a vibrant life experience can be built. My name is April Seifert. I'm a psychologist, a life design strategist, and co-founder of Peak Mind, the Center for Psychological Strength. Each week, I'll introduce you to an expert, a concept, a technique, or a hands-on practice that will help you build psychological strength in your own life. These are the tools to help you thrive. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April and I'm your host. This week is a really cool week. This week we are speaking with someone who has a very different perspective and approach to understanding both physical and mental health than what we typically take on the podcast. This week we're speaking to a woman named Senia Tuominen, and she is a founder of an integrated holistic clinic here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. She is a certified and licensed acupuncturist. She practices traditional Chinese medicine and is a holistic health expert. Here's what's really cool and what's really interesting. Senia takes a very integrated approach to understanding and treating issues with people's both physical and mental health and well-being. And we give a really interesting example during this podcast about why splitting the two and talking about them as distinct things is not correct. I mean, think about any new parent who's been awakened a number of times by a brand new baby, or even if you just stayed up late for four nights in a row, how would you emotionally feel after that? Just that simple example shows you the strong link between our physical and our mental well-being, and we're going to dive into a lot of that within this interview. Not only that, but we are going to be talking about the concept of emotions from three different perspectives. Perspective number one, we're going to be talking about the self-awareness that it takes to both recognize and accurately label an emotion. So that sort of initial knee-jerk part where you are able to recognize what's happening emotionally within your body and label it really well so that you understand it. Number two is this notion of accepting all emotions. So not denying or avoiding or pushing away emotions that we would traditionally label as bad. We get into a lot of discussion about the research backing and some of the approaches from Senia's work that shows the importance of fully experiencing and accepting all emotions. And then last, the third perspective that we talk about is this notion of feeling and accepting those emotions, definitely, but making the conscious decision not to go down a rabbit hole with every single thought or emotion that we feel or that might come up. It's a really powerful discussion, and I'm really excited for you all to hear that from that step-by-step perspective. We get into so much more. I was so excited to be able to ask Senia some of the very newbie questions that I had about the concept of qi and about Chinese medicine and the approach that she takes within her work. There's a really great just getting up to speed part of this interview. So if you're at all interested in that, you're hearing it directly from somebody who is an expert and a practitioner in the field. So that's great. This interview just has a lot in it, and I'm really excited for you all to hear it. Before we jump into the interview, I have to say that this episode is being sponsored by our upcoming absolutely free webinar focused on the ways that our personal identity sets us up with a set of self-limiting beliefs. It is an extremely powerful webinar there's a reason why we picked this topic, because it's so common and it's one of the ways that we can end up holding ourselves back without even realizing it. Our subconscious mind, the part that houses information about, you know, who we learned about who we are, it is so sneaky and it can be so covert and difficult to spot. So I'm excited to go through this webinar to give you a really good understanding of how your identity forms, what might be inside of it, and how it can be leading to create a limitation or an edge to your comfort zone that is holding you back from doing some of the things that you really want to do. This webinar is going to be amazing. Head over to peakmindpsychology.com/webinar to sign up. I think there's 4 different dates and times, so hopefully you'll be able to find one that works for you. And even if you can't, I mean, you're a podcast insider. You're like hanging out with me and listening. So I'll just give you the tip that even if you can't find a date or a time that works for you, just pick one and sign up, because I'm pretty sure we're going to be sending out a replay. We want everybody to have this important information in their hands. All right, guys, I'm really excited for you to hear this interview with Xenia. She has so much information and so much value to share with us today, and it's such a neat approach to bring both the Eastern approach to mental and physical health together with this Western approach. So I hope you enjoy this interview. Xenia, I'm so excited to have you on this episode of the podcast, because this has been so long in the making. It's going to be awesome.
It's such a delight to be here. I'm really glad it's finally happening.
Well, I'm really excited to dive into the work that you do, because I feel like with your background, you're going to provide a different lens or a different perspective on psychological strength than what we've had so far on the podcast. So I'm really excited to dive in. Can you tell us a little bit, just really quickly, about the work that you do and the approach that you take?
Sure. So I'm a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, and I have a clinic in St. Paul, Minnesota, and we really focus on helping people feel better, look younger, love life again, using a lot of holistic techniques. So we'll use acupuncture, herbal medicine, food therapy, lifestyle, kind of anything you can imagine to holistically help people feel like the best version of themselves.
I love that. And here's the thing that I love right off the bat. Like right off the bat, we're going to jump down a rabbit hole, because I just think it's an important non-distinction to make. So many times we hear, you know, in the media and other places about what we can do to be physically healthy, right? We can eat well, we can exercise, drink water, sleep, those things. Physically healthy. And then we, you know, sort of set that aside. And then there's therapy and other things like that to keep us mentally healthy. But we don't talk as often about the fact that it's a distinction that we shouldn't be making, this distinction between physical and mental health. And I know that there's a big integration and overlap between those concepts that we tend to separate within the work that you do. Can you talk a little bit about the perspective that your work and that you take in terms of the way that you think about physical and mental health?
Absolutely, because in traditional Chinese medicine, you don't separate body and mind. We work on them together. So when we're looking at somebody's pattern of imbalance, which is how we diagnose in Chinese medicine, we're looking for, like, we might be looking for qi stagnation. Are you stuck? If you have, you'll have physical manifestations of that. So you might be bloated, you might be constipated, you might have, you know, tension in your shoulders if things are stuck. But you can also have emotional manifestations of that as well, like feeling stagnant, feeling frustrated, irritable, getting angry. So those, they really go hand in hand. We don't separate them. And no matter what imbalance you have in your body, you can have both physical and emotional manifestations of that.
That's so important to keep in mind. And it was sort of a joke that we were making before we hit the record button. You know, we started chatting a little bit about this notion of how interconnected our physical and our mental health is. And the joke that I made was, all you have to do is just don't get enough sleep for like 3 or 4 days in a row and see how you emotionally feel. Or have a baby, like have a baby and stay up for, you know, those first few weeks are just so difficult because you're not sleeping. Do that. And then, you know, emotionally see how you feel. And the impact to your emotional state is so great that it's impossible to ignore the fact that these things are completely dependent on one another.
Absolutely. And I have an almost 3-year-old. So what you're talking about, I live that a lot.
It resonates. It totally resonates. Every parent's probably nodding along with this right now. Something you
Totally.
mentioned, I don't know a lot about this, and this is why I get really excited to have people on who have expertise and a background in something that I don't know anything about, because I just get to ask all the newbie questions and I don't have to worry about looking cool like I have knowledge that I don't, because I really don't in this regard. You mentioned the concept of chi. What is it? Like, what is it, and how does it, I guess, manifest in the body or impact us?
Yeah, so qi is your body's energy. And that's basically what makes us alive, what makes us vibrant, what makes us living, as opposed to like a chair or an inanimate object that's not living. Like there's not a lot of qi in a couch. But lots of qi in human beings and in animals. And in a very like biomedical sense, qi is your body's ATP production. So the your mitochondria make ATP, and that's what fuels the cells and gives them energy to function. And so, on a very, very cellular level, that's what chi is. But on a very high level, it's your life force, your energy, what gives you resilience and vibrancy.
Interesting. And you mentioned a couple of words. You mentioned imbalances in it, and you mentioned it being stuck. Can you dive into each of those a little bit? Because again, these are concepts that are likely new to a lot of the folks who listen to the show. So I would love to get some good grounding before we really go too far.
So kind of those feelings of stuckness would be, imagine if you're sitting in your car and you're on your way to an appointment and traffic is moving really smoothly. You're cutting a little bit close, but you're going to make it there on time. And then traffic starts to slow down and you get a little nervous. You're like, ooh, I just have a few minutes of wiggle room here. I hope that things start moving again. And then traffic comes to a complete stop, and then you realize, I don't know if I'm going to make it on time, and you get a little bit more stressed out about it. And then 3 or 4 minutes pass, and it's complete gridlock, nothing is moving, and then you're like ready to explode. That's kind of the progressions of chi stagnation, where it starts as just like, well, you just feel a little bit irritated, and then it turns into feeling like really agitated, and then it turns into feeling like really angry. Then we know, like, okay, we need to get your chi moving. We need to get the traffic moving again so that you feel better about life again.
That's a really good analogy. I haven't ever heard somebody use that analogy before. That's awesome. How does that, you kind of mentioned it just now with this analogy, but how does all of the work that you do support somebody in just the day-to-day way that they experience mental health? And by that I mean, we talk a lot in Peak Mind about how the way that we experience life is always through the lens of our own minds. Like, we have our own sets of beliefs, we have our own sets of biases, everybody does. We have our own just lens that we experience the world through. So, two people with each with their own unique lens could show up in a the same exact circumstances. One person could have a great experience and another person might not, just simply from the fact that the person who had a great experience is sort of biased and tends to notice really positive things, tends to gravitate toward really positive things, and the other person doesn't. So, is there a connection there at all around the way that we might experience our day-to-day life and our sort of emotional state, that connects to some of the examples you gave?
Sure, because depending on what our pattern is, we might go through the same stressor, and we might respond to it in completely different ways. And so some people will get very they'll get very discouraged, they'll get very depressed if something isn't going well. Other people will get very angry. Others will get very manic, where they frantically want to try to work and get something, to try to improve it. Other people might get really worried or feel really fearful. So depending on what your kind of underlying constitution is, that can affect how you experience things in your day-to-day life.
If you're like most people, your mind isn't always your biggest cheerleader. Do any of these thoughts sound familiar? Ugh, people like you can't do things like that. Come on, who do you think you are? Do you really think you'll be able to keep it up, even if you do succeed at first? Our minds send us a constant stream of thoughts throughout the day, and not all of them are helpful or even true. In reality, a good chunk of those thoughts are mental habits or assumptions that formed long ago, and they don't do us any favors, especially when we're trying to go after something big. These thoughts are self-limiting beliefs, and unfortunately, they're way too common. If you've ever experienced self-limiting beliefs, we've got the free webinar for you. In mid-December, Peak Mind will be hosting an absolutely free live webinar focused on helping you understand where those self-limiting beliefs come from and why they're so influential over you. We'll dig deep into the science of identity, and we'll help you spot those beliefs and see them for what they are, a set of unhelpful assumptions that you don't have to follow. Head over to peakmindpsychology.com/webinar to register. Imagine what your life would feel like if you didn't have those thoughts and beliefs holding you back. How big of a goal would you set? How much more confident would you be? What do you think you could accomplish? Join us live and absolutely free. Registration is required, so head over to peakmindpsychology.com/webinar to sign up. Your limitless future starts now. We can't wait to see you there.
That's such a big connection over into so much of what we talk about. As I mentioned, you know, this lens through which you see the world, it's incredible how different people's experiences of the same exact situation can be. It sounded like before that, you know, as you were talking about sort of these stages of, you know, chi being stuck or feeling like you're stuck and sort of the progression that you can go through, it reminded me of another concept that we talk about a lot in our membership, actually. We talk about a lot how our body and our minds send us thoughts, feelings, bodily states, a variety of different things. We're constantly being sent these signals, whether it's in the form of a thought around, oh, I don't think I should, you know, I don't think I should do that activity. I don't think I'd be very good at it. Or it could be an emotion, like for some reason, a particular situation you're in triggers an emotion of fear, or it could be a bodily state, like a heaviness feeling in your chest or a tightness in your shoulders or in your brow or something. We talk a lot about all of those things being things that happened, right? They're just a thing that happened. But we can add an extra layer of almost emotion or meaning on top of them that takes an otherwise fairly benign situation and magnifies it. So that sense of fear, for example, you might feel afraid before you go give a presentation at work. But by concentrating on that fear and really going down the rabbit hole with it, you go from the point of being, wow, I'm kind of afraid to give this presentation, to potentially all out panic around the thought of having to do it. It sounded like your description of, you know, the traffic is very similar in that regard, that there can be this this notion of attaching to that emotion and sort of following it down the rabbit hole that is similar between the approach that you take to this work and what the work that I studied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's one of the things that I love about doing acupuncture specifically, because it really gets you in touch with the physicality of your emotions. And really, when people receive acupuncture, they get so much more in touch with what's happening in their body. And I deal with a lot of anxiety and stress in my clinic, because, you know, most people are coming in with some level of that, if not a lot of it. And when you get acupuncture, it settles your whole nervous system down. And then instead of having, you know, having this reaction where you're, you know, reacting 10 out of 10 to things, it brings that level down. So maybe you're only reacting to something 6 out of 10, you know, an intensity of 6 out of 10. And then over time, it's maybe more like a 3 out of 10. But when you start to calm that down, then you can really feel where you feel it in your body. Do you feel it in your abdomen when you're super stressed? Do you feel it in your neck? And then as you become more in tune, when you start to get a little bit of tension in your neck, you can recognize it, right? It was like a 3 out of 10 of intensity. Versus if you're not really paying attention to it, it takes, you know, 10 out of 10 tension. You need to have a migraine. You need to be like, you know, popping, you know, Advil or whatever medication you need before you're really going to pay attention to it. And that's kind of like that body-mind connection that I think acupuncture specifically is very helpful for, getting us in touch with that connection between our physical manifestations of emotion.
I love that. What happens to people? Like, let's say they're a brand new person, right? They've never had acupuncture before. They maybe aren't as aware of some of those initial warning signs that, you know, they might be sort of on that path to this building up. What's the experience that a person might have in the beginning, like as they're coming to that realization? Do they get there in one session, or what do they notice during the session that helps them become more self-aware? Because there's, I mean, I'll ruin the punchline in a moment. There's a really neat analog too in the direction that we tend to focus within Peak Mind. So I'd love to hear what happens to people during those acupuncture sessions that help them make that connection.
Right. So when somebody comes in, they're usually coming in with that end point, right? Like, I have IBS, let's say, you know, I do a lot of digestion and metabolism work. That's one of my specialties. So they come in with IBS. They're like, I don't know. I feel bloated all the time. I'm worried about what I'm going to eat. I never know when I'm going to need to use the bathroom. And that's, they're very fixated on how uncomfortable they are. And then we do acupuncture. And one of the first things acupuncture does is it gets things to move. It clears that stagnation. And so their abdomen will calm down. They won't feel so anxious. They won't feel as bloated. And they get up off the table and they're like, wow, this, like, I feel rejuvenated. I don't feel so uncomfortable. That's what they first know. It's like, I'm not as uncomfortable. But then, you know, that will usually last for several days, and they get kind of this relief where they're not feeling the IBS anymore. They're not feeling as anxious anymore. And then after a few days, it'll kind of come back. And then they'll make that connection of, oh, this is what was normal for me. I was used to feeling this all the time. And I just had 3 days where I didn't feel that anymore. Okay, I want to feel that way more often. I want more of that good feeling and less of this uncomfortable feeling that they have. And I definitely experienced that when I first got acupuncture, because I didn't realize it, but when I got acupuncture, I actually had low grade depression, and I knew that I had anxiety. I actually had debilitating anxiety. It was very, very out of control. But I didn't realize that I was depressed at the same time. And so after I got acupuncture, I remember I had gone in for a few sessions, and my anxiety was getting better. And one day I was sitting in my living room, and it felt like almost like the clouds cleared and the sun came out. And I just had this feeling of joy. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't think I've been feeling this. I don't think I felt this for a really long time. And I have friends who are very happy. And I'm just like, this must be what they feel like most of the time. Like, this is amazing. And it for me, it only lasted for a short period of time. It was about an hour. And I remember kind of when the clouds came back and I sort of felt that feeling again. And I remember saying that feeling, that's what I want to get back to. I will spend the rest of my life chasing that feeling so that I feel happy and uplifted and inspired rather than feeling depressed or feeling low or feeling down.
That's incredible. It's funny, I wouldn't have thought that I was going to share this story, but it is so relevant that I feel like I need to. Prior to, right when my husband and I were getting married, there were some things going on just in my life that I was extremely anxious about. There have been a small handful of times that I've decided to go to traditional therapy and see someone to help me kind of sort things out and like organize my thoughts. And that was one of those times. Mm-hmm. The reason why I decided to go in was because we went on our honeymoon, and just leading up to the honeymoon, it wasn't anxiety over the wedding. It was something else that was fairly large in our lives. I had been experiencing this incredible anxiety, just rumination that I had never experienced before. The inability to just be inside my own mind because it was so noisy in there. I just hated it. we went on our honeymoon, and for our honeymoon, we spent about 10 days in Africa. Most of the time we spent it in the Serengeti. It was extremely remote. Almost no man-made objects anywhere. We were staying in the middle of the Serengeti. There were animals everywhere. We were on safari all the time. It was the most immersive experience. And about 2 days in, I had that feeling that you just described, where everything that I was experiencing, I realized, oh my God, I haven't been ruminating like at all. Mm. I've been so immersed in being present and seeing everything and experiencing this trip that I haven't been ruminating at all. I'm like, oh my God, if my mind can do this here, I really think I can do this at home. I don't know how to get there. I don't know what it's going to take, but I definitely am going to try. And that's when I made the call and found a counselor who could just kind of sit down and help me sort through everything. And it was incredible. I mean, incredibly helpful. But exactly as you spoke of, the symptoms lifted, the experience of what it felt like to have that weight on me lifted. And I'm like, oh my God, this is what normal is. This is not how I've been living. Oh, that's so good.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing when you have those transformative experiences. And you know, that's one of the reasons why I really like doing acupuncture and as one of the tools of Chinese medicine, because we're doing something in our office to help to shift somebody's body and mind. And so I've done a lot of different types of therapy and coaching, and I just love them. And that's part of my practice. I do a lot of that with my patients. But what I found was that when we're able to do something to physically shift somebody's energy before they leave the office, all the things that we just talked about that they need to do, or all of the, you know, whatever we're trying to change with the way that they're viewing the world, when we shift their energy, they walk out of that office and they're in a space where they can do it again. So they're able to do that. It's like they have their Serengeti moment where they're like, okay, so this is what I need to do. I'm just going to go do it. And it really sets people up for success because you're shifting them physically and emotionally before they even leave.
That's so powerful. That's really cool. Something else that we were chatting about, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. Something else that we were talking about before we hopped on to record that I know is something that you're passionate about is the notion of experiencing all of our emotions and not, I guess, pushing away or ignoring certain emotions. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that relates to maybe qi and some of the work that you do?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So in Chinese medicine, there's no such thing as a bad emotion. The only problem with an emotion is if it gets stuck and then it causes a prolonged mood. But a transient emotion, none of them are bad emotions. And each of them will affect us will affect our qi or energy in a different way. So for instance, if we're angry, that causes our qi to rise up, like picture somebody's face getting red or their ears ringing, you know, when they're angry. When we feel afraid, that causes our qi to descend. It goes downward. Like you might have loose bowels when you're in a haunted house, or like you might, if you're nervous, you might feel like you need to go to the bathroom. If you have like overjoy, like too much joy and excitement can cause your energy to just get really frazzled. And worry can cause your qi to get sort of like knotted up in your stomach. And then grief, which I think is really interesting, grief causes your qi to just poof, disappear. Like you feel fine. And then something, you know, triggers grief in you, especially if you've recently lost a loved one, something reminds you of that person, boom, you're just leveled. You're like, you're exhausted. You can't do anything for the rest of the day. And so kind of knowing what effect those emotions have on your energy can also help you to identify like, okay, well, which ones of these am I having a lot? And what do I need to, you know, what do I need to be careful of how can these affect me over time?
That's so cool. There's about four directions that I want to go with that. One of them is around this identification. Something that we've noticed is that people tend to have a very limited vocabulary when it comes to their emotional state, right? They'll say, I feel good or I feel bad, right? Good, bad. instead of saying, I'm feeling guilty, I'm feeling jealous, I'm feeling joy, I'm feeling contentment, I'm feeling, you know, there's these probably a range of maybe 30 different words that you could use to describe the state that you're in. And what I think is interesting about what you just said is helping people do the simple task of identifying and labeling correctly and accurately an emotion. It changes the game for people. Because if you say, I'm feeling bad, I don't know what to do about that. I don't know, what do you mean bad? Like, I have no idea. If you're feeling guilty, that means that there's likely something that you've done and something that you can repair. There's some action to that. There's a path forward from that. But with these really diffuse sort of non-labeling words that we use, it makes our just experience really difficult because we can't manage the situation of feeling those different emotions if we can't label them at all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the questions we often ask our patients is, which of the five emotions is your predominant emotion? Because then it kind of simplifies it, right? It's like, let's think about five. And so, you know, does it tend to be more anger or excitement? We consider those excess type emotions. Or does it tend to be fear or worry or sadness? We consider those to be deficient type emotions. Mm. And so that can then inform you what to do next. Like if you have a lot of anger, well, then we need to cool that down and calm that down. If you have a lot of sadness or worry, well, then we know that your body's probably deficient and we need to build your body back up. And that's going to make you stronger and more resilient.
Oh, so good. So good. I love that. The other thing that I loved was way back when we started this part of the conversation, you talked about how there are no quote unquote good and bad emotions. I'll get to the sort of punchline that I alluded to before. We did a recent episode. It was, let me peek, episode number, let's find him. A better podcast host would just know this right off the hand. Episode number 143. We did a conversation with Stephen Hayes. He's the originator of acceptance and commitment therapy. But one big part of his research and one big part of that modality and that therapy technique is that you don't push away or deny any emotions, because all of those emotions, number one, all of those emotions provide input to us to help us understand a situation. So you don't want to cut off that input because it's important to help you navigate the world a little bit more efficiently and accurately. But also by pushing that emotion off, you tend to push everything off. So if you're pushing away, you know, feelings of grief even, or any sort of negative type feelings, that things that we would label as negative, what they find is that people who do that habitually, they become habitually able to, or they tend to push away all emotion, including positive ones. So they can experience less joy and less prolonged amounts of joy when they're pushing away things like grief and traumatic feelings, rather than just accepting them and experiencing them. Now, that's easy to say, right? I mean, because it doesn't feel good to be in a state of grief or in a state of trauma, but the implications for avoiding it are really steep. So there's this neat parallel between, you know, the Eastern sort of viewpoint that you have in the work that you do and a very Western researcher. He does study actually quite a bit of Zen and things like that, but a very Western approach to research and psychology. There's a very, you know, nice analog there and parallel there with this notion of, you know, no bad emotions.
Yeah. And I experienced that with one of my patients just this week so I have a holistic weight loss program, and I had a patient who has lost just, you know, dozens of pounds. She's been feeling really, really good. She's looking really, really good, but she wasn't really happy about it. And I'm used to people jumping up and down with every pound that they lose, you know? So I've been trying to use some herbs and stuff to help boost her energy, but she was, you know, still tired a lot, not feeling a lot of happiness, even though she's been working with me for a few months. And finally I asked her, I'm like, it seems like your emotions are just really stuck. Is there something that you've been holding on? Like, have you been dealing with grief? Because your energy is so depleted. It's almost like you're dealing with grief all the time. Well, it turns out, you know, she got very tearful. We actually had a very, you know, emotional conversation. Her mom had passed away like 3 years ago, a long time ago. And she still had a lot of unprocessed regrets around her mom passing away. And so she's, you know, and she, you know, she started crying in my office. I was like tearing up with her. Like it was just this really, like it was this really important breakthrough. I'm like, look, like, yeah, this is something that you need to address because you're not able to feel joy because the sadness is, it's taking all of your energy. Everything is getting stuck in your body because of this overwhelming sadness. So you need to address that. And, you know, then you're going to be able to feel joy and happiness and excitement again. And then you're going to want to celebrate like how amazing you look, but I really want to get you there, whatever it takes to get you there.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. It's interesting. We've kind of talked about two steps of sort of a three-part, say, journey that I want to make sure that we hit on and make sure we complete. We talked about this initial step of recognizing or being self-aware enough to recognize and label an emotion or even just a bodily feeling that you're having or thoughts that you're having. So that self-awareness and the recognition is a really important step. That second one is the acceptance of it, right? The yep, this is what I'm having and I'm going to choose to not deny it and push it away and avoid the situation. I'm going to accept it. But then there's a third step where you almost, in a lot of cases, have to make a conscious decision to not go down the rabbit hole with it, or in, you know, the words that you were using, allow it to become a mood that persists all the time. Can you talk a little bit about that stage? Because I feel like we've done a good job of fleshing out the first two, but I want to make sure people get that last piece because you don't have to go down the rabbit hole with every single feeling that you have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And here's where Chinese medicine gets really cool, because I talked about kind of those, the five main emotions. There are more of them, but the five main ones. Well, each one of those emotions, if we have too much of it, if it gets stuck in our body, will damage a different organ system. So like grief will damage your lungs. So that can create respiratory issues, that can create immune problems. Anger, it can damage your liver. That can affect your ability to detox. Overexcitement, over like too much joy, too much mania can damage your heart over time. Like think about people who are like super excited about all the projects they're working on. They're really stressed about them. Well, you know, then, you know, 30 years down the line, they're having heart issues. Worry can affect your digestion. It can damage your digestion. You're mentally digesting too much, so you can't physically digest very much anymore. I see this a lot in IBS. And then fear can damage your kidney system and affect your bladder as well. So it's really important not to have those emotions stick around for too long. Like we want to feel that, we want to process them, we want them to move on, because otherwise they can cause prolonged damage. And so when we're kind of looking at the symptoms that somebody's experiencing in Chinese medicine, we want to look at, okay, well, what organs are being affected here? Because there might be a longstanding emotion that you haven't been addressing that we need to take care of at the same time as like physically and energetically shifting things for you.
That's interesting. This is all, I feel like I understand, not only do I understand this approach and your work a bit more, but it's so interesting how, just how many parallels there are between the approach that you take and just everything that, you know, I know about the field of psychology. It's almost like, you know, these two disciplines were studying the same thing, gave them different names, or, you know, pointed out the same mechanisms and just talk about them in slightly different ways, but they really are targeting the same experiences, the same experienced emotions and thoughts and whatever that we all have day to day.
Mm-hmm. And they're universal. They're timeless, right? So, you know, when you talk about psychological research, you know, probably published studies have been around for 100, 150 years. But I mean, Chinese medicine has been around for 5,000 years. So, I mean, the emotions that humans experience they're universal. They've been around for ages. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, different types of medicine look at it in a slightly different way and describe it in different ways. And yet it's still like the same fundamentals.
So cool. From that perspective, then, I would love to hear the way that you think about psychological strength. Like, from the perspective of the work that you do, what does it mean for a person to be psychologically strong?
Well, I think that somebody who's psychologically strong has a very balanced mind, their mood is balanced as well, and they're very clear on what their purpose is. And when you have that kind of body, mind, spirit combination all together, then you're able to roll with whatever comes your way. Because I think when somebody is very psychologically strong, I feel like they're able to live the biggest possible life that they dream of. They're not held back by physical, emotional issues that can limit them. They can really be the best at whatever they want to be the best at, whatever their purpose is here on this earth.
So good. Totally agree. I totally agree. Can you tell us a little bit, where can people find you if they want to learn more? This has been so interesting. And I feel like just due to my lack of knowledge in the area, we've gotten a really good introduction, but I know there's a lot more underneath the surface that people can learn from you. So where can people most easily connect with you and find you?
Probably the easiest place is on our website. So my clinic is Healing Insight, acupuncture and holistic medicine. Our website is healinginsightonline.com. And on our website, I have a few dozen videos from our local TV show, Twin Cities Live, where I talk about different holistic health concepts and acupuncture. And so it's just a great way to get introduced to a lot of different issues that people deal with and how we view them in Chinese medicine, and even what we do about them as well. So some really good tips that you can take home and use.
I love that. Thank you so much. This has been so eye-opening. It's just interesting, as I mentioned, how much alignment and similarity there is between these two approaches, that similar to the whole body and mind discussion we had, right? We tend to separate them and think that they're all, you know, it's an East thing, it's a West thing, or it's a body thing, it's a mind thing. But there's so much commonality between the way that you think about, how a person experiences life and the field of psychology and how we think about how a person experiences life. So this has just been fantastic. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this expertise with us. This has been great.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It's really fun to get to talk about this from kind of both the East and the Western perspective.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so, but today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.